Good evening, everybody. It's been a while since I've done a live, and I thought it was time. So I'm in this really interesting thing right now. I may have to negotiate for a job, thank God. And so I was thinking about negotiations and this, that, and the other thing. And I thought, you know what? I haven't talked to my channel really much about negotiations. Talking about the different types of rates and this and that. But actual the skills of negotiations, there's actual kind of a plan to it, a path to it. And you know, it's funny, I can talk about it and I can teach other people how to do it, but when I do it, I just turn into a blubberfish. I just like, blah! I freak out and I don't negotiate well. But yet I can teach my clients how to do it, so I never figured this out. Anyway, my name is Miss Parker and I'm from RV Project 2. And I'm going to play a Telegram disclaimer and then we'll get into it. Here we go.
The material and information contained or given on this website or audio files are for general information and entertainment purposes only. All parties on this channel are not lawyers or financial advisors. You should not rely on this material to make any business decisions. While this channel does endeavor to keep the info up to date and correct, RV Project Help makes no representations, warranties of any kind, express or implied about the completeness, accuracy, reliability, suitability, or availability with respect to the website, information products, services, audio files, or related graphics contained on this website for any purposes. All due diligence is the sole responsibility of the participant.
I just love Kanaka. He did that recording for me and I just love it. I play it every time. So anyway, negotiations. It's really interesting because a lot of times when I talk to people about negotiations, the biggest thing you have to know is what do you really want, okay? And sometimes what you think you really want, you don't really have a firm grip on. And so you have to really understand what you want specifically. What is it you're really after? And then what are you really willing to exchange to get it? And that is literally the crux of negotiation. And it gets really interesting when you don't know what you want, or you're so focused on one part of the thing that you want that you don't consider anything else. So that leaves you in a kind of an unfair advantage. So probably one of the worst things you can do if you're going into do some kind of negotiation is not having a backup plan, okay? And having no plan B, it's at that point you're playing cards, you're gambling, and you're just bluffing. And if you don't have a backup plan, you take away your option of walking away. And walking away is a part of a plan, whether or not you might think so or not. There's an actual term for there's a term for it. And it's called BATNA, which means best alternative to negotiated agreement. It's, you know, if you talk to people who've been to business school, that's where they learn this stuff at, okay? And they're, you know, you learn it in business school and then you immediately throw it away because people never really use the term once they leave business school. It's like kind of antiquated. So How good is your alternative? What is your best alternative to a negotiated agreement? What is your best alternative? And what kind of different agreement can we talk about? Is it price, time to deliver, the product, the quality of the product, the production of the product? I mean, there's all kinds of things you can make as a differentiator. I usually have a negotiated agreement with a very specific set of requirements, especially when I'm writing documents for a client. And it's everything has a date due, you know? And so a lot of times I will get customers or clients that, like, it takes me 2 weeks to actually build out a good business plan. Okay. That's common. 2 weeks is about standard. But I will have clients come to me and go, I need a business plan in 3 days. I've got a pitch I got to do. And they said, I can't just do a pitch. I have to have a full business plan. So I have to break my rules to get an agreement with the client. You know, my rules are 2 weeks or get the hell out of my office, which is probably not the best way to do rules, but that's pretty much how it works for me. So I'll say, look, this is how I structure my deals. And if you want something different, then you're going to have to figure out a different approach to what I need to get things done. So a lot of times it's time, more time. Sometimes it's double the price. It's you just have to figure out what you're willing to do before you start the agreement in the negotiation. And sometimes that's harder than the negotiation itself. But when you're doing an alternative to what you normally do, it's all about getting as much control of the job or the product on your side as possible. The more things you can control, the more you can work yourself towards a win, you know? So try to get as much as you can possibly get in the deal if you're going to do a different alternative to what you normally do. Try to get as much control of the job or the situation as you possibly can. That's always the safest way to go. That way you have more wiggle room in case it takes longer, in case something doesn't come out as you planned. And that's how you end up looking good at the end, by having a backup plan, you know? The worst thing you can do in negotiation is give away something for free. You know, how many times do you see employees that they volunteer? Oh yeah, I'll do that, sir. Oh yes, I'll do that. They'll do extra work and they won't ask for anything in return. And what happens is you start to label yourself a patsy. You know, pretty soon you've got all kinds of work dumped on you and you don't get anything back. Not, you know, and there's things you can get back that are not money. Okay. And when you give something away or you go out of your way to make something happen for somebody else, that is a negotiation. And there's an old saying that says, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. So you want to always make sure that you get something for something you give in business. It's basic rules of equivalent exchange. You do something for me, I do something for you. If you start doing something for them and you're not getting nothing for you, that makes you a mark, a patsy, a fool. Take your pick. So what kind of things can you get? Hey John, I'll do this extra project for you, but you need to buy me lunch two times next week. Fair enough. Hey Mary, you need all the statistic work done. How about you cover me for an hour after work next week twice because I've got to go pick up my daughter from soccer practice. Oh yeah, that works. Or the boss comes in and asks you, "Hey, we've got this client coming in, and Billy can't get this work done in time. So can you do it?" Hey, I can, but how about giving me box seat tickets to the Raiders game this weekend? Always, always, always ask for something in return if you're going to do free work, because free is only free to the person that's getting work out of you. It's not free to you. So scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And before you even have somebody ask you, "Hey, can you do this for me? Do that for me?" Think about what you're going to ask for. Hey, if somebody in the office asked me for this, I could ask for that in return. Hey, if somebody asks me for this, I can ask them, "Hey, can you bring a pizza for lunch tomorrow?" But it's always something. You don't want them to think you're a stepping stone. And if you do work for free, pretty soon everybody in the office will have you doing work for them for free because they just figured out they don't have to do their work. You'll do it for them. That's a negotiation, folks. That's where you first start learning how to negotiate. Is actually in the office space. Strength of negotiation is it's a game, okay? It's a game. It's a big game. And I guess the best way to explain it is if you're buying a car. You're buying a car and the other person is selling a car. And this whole game is about me trying to figure out what's the lowest point you're going to sell that car at, and you trying to get me to pay more money than you expect to sell a car for. That's the whole game. And what that point is called the reserve point. Okay. And that's the lowest option that you'd consider making the trade or making the deal. The whole thing about negotiation is trying to figure out what the other party's reserve point is. As soon as you figure out what their lowest number is, their reserve point is, you win. It's simple. Because at that point, oh yeah, I'm good or I'm not. And then you make the deal from there. So if you're once you don't want to ever leave money on the table. And the way you don't leave money on the table is by figuring out what's their lowest number. What's the lowest they'll sell this car at? You want to buy the car for $6,000 and they're willing to sell it for $4,000. Well, if you just offer them $6,000, well, Snikey, you left $2,000 that you didn't have to pay for that car because they thought they were going to sell it for four. That's the game in a nutshell. That's what negotiation, when you break it down to the lowest common denominator, that's all negotiation is. It's trying to figure out what the other person's breaking point is. Where will they break it off at? Where's the lowest point that they'll go? When I did the rate negotiations and I talked about sovereign rates and all those kind of things, I made a point to say, listen, on some of these rates, you have to ask for them. Okay? And if you don't ask for different things, you won't ever get it. And negotiation is It's a mix, okay? It's a mix between it's a mix between sales and therapy. Some people never listen, okay? And you have to listen in negotiations. You have to listen to what they're saying. You have to listen what they're not saying, you know? Other people never ask. Most people in negotiation, they never ask for the sale. They never ask for the next point. They just don't ask. And the reason why they don't ask is they're not listening to what the other person is telling them. If you're going to be good at negotiation, you need to know when to listen and when to ask. Because if you can get the person that you're trying to negotiate to talk, the more they say, and the more you listen when they are talking, you're gonna understand inherently what their lowest point is usually, and you're gonna know when to ask it, when to ask for that price, or when to ask to close the deal. So why do people go to therapy? Okay. I know this doesn't sound crazy, but why do people go to therapy? They already know what's going on in their mind. They're just trying to figure it out. Okay. That's the same way sales is. You already know what's happening. You're there to make a deal. And you're just trying to figure out how to make it work and get what you want, not what they want. And both parties are trying to do the exact same thing. So they're trying to figure out and make sense of what the other person is saying so that they could get the best deal. If you keep that kind of tucked away in the back of your mind, it'll make negotiations a lot less frightening. Because each of you are trying to do the exact same thing. You're trying to figure out how to make it work, and each of you are trying to figure out what you want and get what you want. And that's what both parties are trying to do in a negotiation. So you're trying to solve this problem, and the correct solution is the benefit of both people. Okay? If it's not that, then it's a hostile takeover. Here's an example of that. You got $6,000. You're willing to spend $6,000 for a car. The guy that's going to sell you the car, he's in a terrible jam. And he needs $6,000. But he'll take 4,000 if that's all he can possibly get. But he doesn't want to sell it that low because he's got to move. He's leaving town, you know. He needs 6,000. And he slips. And in the negotiation, he lets it known that he's in serious issue to sell this car. And if it doesn't come up to a win-win situation, you'll probably able to get the car at $4,000, but it's not a benefit to both parties. So he walks away mad and cussing you. Do you think you'll ever get a deal with that guy again? Hell no. Won't ever, ever, never happen because it's not a negotiation, it's a hostile takeover. So if you think about it, when you go to therapy, they say, why do you want something? Why do you want therapy? Why do you want to figure this out? That's why do you want to buy this car at this price? You know, why is a lot more valuable than what? And if you figure out the why you want something before you can go negotiate it, you're going to have a lot easier time finding a win-win to the solution. It's way more valuable than what you want. If you understand the reason why they're trying to sell or why they would make a decision to way they do, you sometimes can come up with a really creative solution where other things get put on the table that you didn't even think about. For instance, I didn't have money. My car had been stolen. I had 10 pounds of weed, and I'm an amazing weed grower. My weed is like 30%. It's extremely high THC. And the people that know me know that I have very, 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 what they call fire cannabis, okay? And a friend of mine knew of a guy in Colorado that had a truck. He was going to move to Florida, and he needed to sell this truck, but he just needed to sell it. The money wasn't a big deal. He needed to sell it. And she also knew that what he was going to do, he was going to go buy a shit ton of cannabis before he left Colorado. So that was one of the big, and the truck costs, you know, was a lot more money on gas than a small car. So when I told my friend, you know, my car got stolen and I need another vehicle, and she said, you know, would you be open to trading? And I'm like, what? And she goes, trading 2 pounds of cannabis for a truck. I'm like, hell yeah. I negotiated a deal where I traded 2 pounds of cannabis for my pickup that I drive right now. I didn't give any money for it. Had I considered that as a way to buy a vehicle? Hell no. Did this guy consider it as a way to buy a vehicle? No, not at all. But she put me on the phone with him, and we had a little chat, and he told me, you know, what he was hoping to get for the truck. And I said, hey, you know, your friend told me that you were going to go to the dispensary, make a beeline to a dispensary, and it's going to take you like 4 or 5 days to spend, you know, $4,000 on weed. I said, what if I could just trade you 2 pounds of weed for the truck, and you can have a sample of the weed before you even trade? You can pick the sample out of the bags. I don't care. And hell yeah, he was over there in about 5 minutes, and he pulled a bud out and twisted that thing up, lit it, and he goes, oh, hell yeah, you got a deal. So once I knew the reason he was wanting to sell the truck, and he had an issue that he was trying to achieve, which was get weed before he left Colorado, it was a win-win for both of us. I would do a deal with that guy tomorrow. I know he would do a deal with me tomorrow because he called me up and asked if I'd ship weed to Florida. No. I'm not doing interstate trading. Thank you very much. But that's a real good example of knowing what the other person wants, being open to have a different type of negotiation, and being open to receiving a different type of solution than what you were actually looking for. I thought I was going to have to sell some weed to go out and buy a car. No, I just made a point-to-point sale. It was great. Super easy. Best negotiation ever. Sometimes one of the best negotiation skills are when you were a kid. You learned it as a child. Maybe some of you didn't. It was called the you cut, I pick. It was my favorite way to settle arguments over cake. It was a piece of cake in the kitchen, and you had to split it with your brother. And if you let your brother cut the cake and pick the cake, he's always going to take the biggest piece of cake. Or if you let your little brother cut the cake, he cuts two big pieces of cake and eat one little piece, and then he gives it to Scott. He didn't like Scott. So we're always fighting. So they don't know how to share because you're You're just fighting over what you perceive to be the best piece, quote unquote. So with the you cut, I pick rule, one of them gets to cut the cake and the other one gets to pick the side they want. This way, both people have a control over the outcome. The brother that has the knife or the sister that has the knife, they'll cut the cake evenly as possible. Because if they try to do anything foolish, then they're going to use up more of their cake because the other person gets to pick. You can use that same method in business. It's a very easy, simple negotiation. You put two projects together and then I get to pick which one I want. You know, you put two different, you will split the work. Okay, you tell me the division of the work and then I get to pick what part of the work I want. It's a simple, simple negotiation. It works really well. Oh, I need coffee. I need coffee. I need coffee. I had to stop and make a pot of coffee before I started this, and hot coffee is absolutely fabulous. When you negotiate, one of your goals should be to get to the point where the other person or you are saying at the pretty much the same time, hey, that's great. That's right. That's a magical phrase. It means that both of you are in agreement, and that's when the win-win negotiations happen. The more that one person agrees with the other person, you will find that they're both in line, their objectives are the same. If you can get two people to start agreeing with the party as you're starting, the more that they can agree about things in the beginning, the faster they get to their that's right part. The faster they'll get to the deal is about to close. When you go into a negotiation, you really need to think about what the other side wants before you meet with the other side, okay? If you figure out what they want, it's usually a faster path to get to where both of you are in agreement. Sometimes if you figure out what they want, it's a faster path to go, no, I don't even want to waste my time. So many people start a negotiation and they don't even have a clue what the other people want. They haven't even thought about it. When you make a decision, that usually comes from part of your brain that you know somewhere deep down, if you were going to say yes or no to a proposal, it's from deep in your brain, okay? And that is the spot where agreement is as well. Some of you know this about me. I used to write script kiddies. And if you've ever had a phone salesman call you up and ask you about stuff, trying to sell you to stuff, you're going to notice that what they try to do is ask as many questions from you as they can to get you to say the word yes. The more they can get you to say the word yes, the more they're putting your brain into a pattern of behavior that will show up in the final negotiations, and you will say yes, sometimes even if you don't mean to say yes, because you keep saying yes, 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 yes. So I talk to whoever I'm talking to. I talk about stuff that has nothing to do with the negotiation because I want them to agree with me about something. I'm going to go buy a new washing machine. And I know that at this one store, if you talk to the guys, they can sometimes squeeze you a better deal, or they can go talk to the manager. And it was a corporate store, so they had a little wiggle room. So I would go in there, and I bought all my appliances from this place. And I go in there, and I talk to a salesman. How's that football game this weekend? Did you have a good time? Oh, yeah. You ask, you think of the questions that you know that they will say yes to. And you have that part of your conversation before you get to whatever it is you're trying to deal with. You get them to say yes. You can get them to say yes 6 times. The percentage of them agreeing to your deal goes up significantly. When I'm planning on using that exact thing when I go to the RV. Oh man, it's been a busy, looks like it's been busy. Have you had a lot of, you've been really busy in here? Oh yeah, I sure have. Man, it's must be hard to be working so many hours. Oh yeah, but it's great though because we have a lot of people come in there. Did you have a good holiday? Whatever it is you can think of to get them to say yes, get them to say yes. Because you're setting their brain up to show a pattern of behavior so that when you ask the big question, hey, is there any other rates available? Or hey, what would you say about 6% interest over 10 years instead of 3% interest over 10 years? Because we're going to keep this amount of money in your bank. Oh, yeah, yes. You've primed the pump for them to say yes. And it doesn't really matter what you ask them, what questions you ask. What matters is how many times you can get them to say yes before you get to the point of the deal. Seems funny, but it's true. I am not good at negotiation with people that I don't like. And the thing is, you know, everybody's different. We grew up in different places. We have different upbringings. There's different kinds of education and ethics in households. And if you have an idea of what the personality is that you're working with, that's one of the most valuable skills you can have when you're negotiating. No, Maggie. And I have the tolerance of a gnat, which makes me a terrible negotiator. There's a really fine line between tolerance and walking away. And these lines move depending on how badly or not you need to go negotiate for whatever you're trying to do. You know, in a perfect world, emotions wouldn't be a variable. I've thrown away major deals, and knew I was doing it at the time. Didn't give a fuck because I didn't like that person. And I knew better. I knew better when I was doing it. Did not give a blessed God fuck damn shit. Nothing. Wouldn't do it. Wouldn't do it. And that's a flaw. And I know it's a flaw. I don't negotiate anything that's personal for me. I send in the A-team because I know if it's somebody that I don't like, I'm just going to just go, fuck, I'm not doing it. You know, I could need something really, really bad. And I'm so hard-headed that I flat won't do it. I mean, you just drag me and I'll be making 11s as you drag me with my boots because I'm just flat not doing it. And if you've got the ability to work with logic over emotions, You're way ahead of the game, okay? You need to master your emotions if you're going to have a negotiation with somebody you don't like. You want to think that if you have the facts or the truth or the numbers, let the numbers do the talking, deals would just close. But it doesn't work like that. It just doesn't work like that. So you need to read the other person and change your approach according to the emotions that the other person is showing you or feeling with you. Now, if you don't have this skill, you shouldn't be negotiating. I know my flaws. I know them real well. Look, there they are. When you negotiate with people you care about, your reputation is ultimately the win on that kind of negotiation. And here's marriage is the biggest example, okay? Would you rather not talk to your husband for a week just to prove you were right? No, probably not. It's that's you win the battle but lost the war, okay? Sometimes winning is too expensive. Sometimes you have all the cards in the deck. You got the ace, you got the king, you're done, okay? But you're negotiating with somebody you love or you care about, or a friend or a relative, somebody that's important to you. And even if you have all the cards, you know right where the line is drawn, you know exactly what their weak point is, you know what their deal point is. There comes a time when your reputation is more valuable than the win. And if you have the ability to play at a higher point and let them have more money or you give away more, whatever, that's called winning respectably, okay? And that builds goodwill. And goodwill is really important because when you do the right thing in a deal, people get it. And people will recommend you to other people. And the long-term returns are far greater than the short-term win. I've had opportunities to just slay somebody in a deal. I knew their weak point. I knew their trade point. I knew exactly what it was. I knew what they were willing to give up, and I knew that what they were willing to give up was not fair. And I did the right thing. And by doing the right thing, I ended up getting more business than I could possibly handle. In fact, I turned away business. So your reputation is often way more important. Your reputation of doing the right thing in a deal is more important than the win. You could have got that couple hundred dollars, but you also knew that that couple hundred dollars was a major loss to the friend or the relative you were doing a deal with. So you do the right thing. You pay the right amount, even though you knew there was a soft point that was a lot easier to get to. These are the kind of things you have to think about, and you should be thinking about before you go into a deal, especially if you know this information before you go. When I was younger, I was really, really, really bad about winning the battle and losing the war. I was so focused on money that I would take every penny off the table. I didn't give a shit. And that cost me my reputation. That cost me big deals later. Oh no, you can't deal with her because she'll just drain you dry. When I was older and wiser, oh yeah, you deal with Parker, she's fair. I left money on the table on certain deals, And that money was like water. It watered every other deal. And I made hundreds and thousands more dollars on three different deals I can think of on the top of my head because of a deal that I let go at a lower value to me. I lost money on the deal. Not a lot, but it was enough to the other person knew I was being fair, and that was worth everything. When you have power in negotiation, you keep your mouth shut. You don't tell them. You just play the game. Okay? How do you have power? It's that cut the pie, let them pick. That's how. When I'm in my biggest deals, when I'm in my biggest negotiations of shit that I really, really want, I always make two offers. I make two offers, two completely different offers. And then I let them pick between the offer. I can do this and this, or I can do that and that. What would you rather me do? Then it doesn't come, then it changes the whole dynamics to, oh, you're going to hire me. Which way do you want to hire me? From, oh, you're going to hire me or not hire me. You give them two choices. And the human mind being what the human mind is, they'll pick one of those choices. And it's not the one that's like, we're not doing a deal. It's usually a done deal if you give them two choices. It's a kind of a different approach. It's a lot of business colleges will talk about this, and kids will write papers on it, and they'll go right out in the real world, and they'll never, ever, ever do it. But it works. It works really, really well. Hopefully this negotiation I might come up with very soon. I'm gonna make two different offers to the person. One is on location on site, the other is on location part of the time and on site of the of where the sales could be the other part of the time. And either one would work for this person. And when you structure the deal this way and have the other person pick, they're telling you what they value the most. When they pick the deal that they want, they tell you what's more important to them. And when you know what's more important to them, then you know how to win them over and get them to, go all the rest of the way and sign the deal. Because once they pick, you have control. You have total control of the deal because now you know what to say. And even though they think they're calling the shots, you are. Keep your mouth shut. You've got the power right then. Don't talk about it. And you'll walk away at aces. You'll walk away with the best deal you could have got. When, oh, how do we do this? How do I explain this? Smart people always want trade-offs, okay? What do I mean by trade-offs? Sometimes doesn't take much effort on your part to see massive differences for the other person that you're dealing with. And those massive differences will pay off for you in spades. Here's an example. When I was a kid, there was a lady that kept goats down the end of the road. She was an old lady. And I go check on her every couple days in the summer. I would take her iced tea, and I did this for years, every summer, because I knew that the summers were so hot and she was frail that if something ever happened, that people really wouldn't be down by her house very much. And, you know, nobody would ever know she was hurt. So I would just kind of check in on her. The year I was 16, she passed away. She left 80% of her fortune to me. Just a little girl down the street. I was, oh, I don't know. I think I was 10 or 12. But it wasn't a lot of effort on my behalf. But it made a world of difference to her. That's a smart trade-off. This is the same thing. You call your parents or your grandparents, and it takes 10 minutes of your time, but it makes their entire day. It's the same thing with business. I've made one phone call. I've made one recommendation to someone I've worked with in the past, and I've solved the problem for them. And in the future, there's somebody I want to do business with. And that one thing that you've done carries a lot of weight in your friendship. One of the guys in my channel, I helped him. I got him a job. And it was not a big thing for me to do. I thought I knew the family reputation well enough. And I pulled some strings. And even though he had never met me face to face, I got him a really, really good job. That same person, I now want to help have me help run a global cannabis industry. It didn't take much for me. It was just a phone call. And now I've got somebody that I trust that I want to work with on a global scale. So sometimes you can do just very little things and it makes a world of difference to somebody else. And this works in business too. I had a friend of mine who, she worked at the racetrack in Las Vegas. And when NASCAR comes to town, you know, everybody's bothering this gal for free tickets, this, that, the other. And I made pineapple Slurpees, pineapple juice Slurpees, where I crushed the pineapple and I ice and pineapple and the whole nine yards. And she just loved this. And so every time I was going down by the racetrack, I'd make one for her and just drop it off. It didn't take me any time. I mean, 10, 15 minutes extra to make a Slurpee for her, or make her a pineapple. I call it pineapple slush. And when NASCAR came around, I had 2 to 4 tickets for every show NASCAR ever had in Vegas, just because I realized that this gal, she really liked these, and she couldn't get out of her office in the summer. It was too, and you know, it's blazing hot in Vegas. So when you do nice things like that for people, it doesn't take much effort, but the rewards can be incredible. It carries a huge amount of weight in your working relationship later. So, you know, if you've got somebody that's in a job or in a position that you know that you might need help in that sometime, think of something that you can do for them that doesn't take much effort. And nobody does those things anymore. So when you do them, it's massive. It makes a huge reaction to people. When you are doing negotiation, if the other person feels like they're getting something good out of the deal, that is an effective negotiation. It's a win-win of the negotiation. If they feel like they've got a gain in this, and they're are different strategies that you can use to get this. what you're doing is you're making your negotiation partner feel safe, and they feel like they have some kind of control, and they work with you to build a feeling of good faith between the two of you. What do you have to do that? They have to believe that you are negotiating in good faith. They have to believe that you're not trying to screw them over. You need to be genuinely interested in what the other person on the other side of the negotiation wants. And if you know what they're willing to achieve, you can modify your offer to fit what their goals are. You know? So be interested in what drives them. Be interested in why they want to make the deal. And then talk about those things. Because you're then tailoring your offer to what they like. And that usually ends up in a win-win situation. If you like what they're doing and you think it's a great thing that they're doing, use that emotion. Oh yeah, that's really awesome. Be excited. If they're excited about what they're trying to do with their deal, oh yeah, you'd be excited too. If they're nervous, upset, any kind of negative reaction, don't focus on that at all. Focus on the positive parts of whatever is making them happy, because that will build trust all by itself, and it will cause you to get farther along in the negotiation than you want to, you know, you'll go farther faster. It's sometimes negotiations like playing poker. You look for the tells, you know, people will tell you, signal what they really want, even if they don't verbalize it, you know. They're looking to buy your truck, and they look at it, and they're talking to you, and they look over at it, and they give you that, you know, they give that look like, wow, that's super nice truck, you know. Ooh, I like that truck. They're not saying those words out loud. Their eyes and face are telling you what they think. That will help you go farther into getting what you want in the deal. I took a class on police forensics, and one of the things they talk about was mirroring. And it's what police do to get criminals to confess, is they listen to what the other person is saying and they do the exact same thing. In that, and they're building trust. They lean forward, the other person leans forwards. When, you know, focus on starting your sentence the exact same way the other person finishes their sentence. Try to say the last three words that they just said and add that into what you're going after. It's called mirroring, okay? And what it does is it signals to the other person that you guys are very much alike. And you guys get along great, because you think, whoa, you're saying what I was just saying. You're thinking what I'm thinking. This is pretty cool. It's not rocket science. People want to deal with people that they find the same, similar in nature. Practice these kind of techniques on friends and family until they become natural to you. If they catch you doing it, that's a major red flag. You know, if you read, you know, you don't want them to catch you doing it. So use it with caution, but it does work. Mirroring does work. And that's what I try to do. I try to use the last three words out of their sentence, the last sentence they say, or last three you know, like not those words, but I mean, like, what did I say? I don't use like, what did I, you know, it's the last three important words and start your next sentence with those words. It takes time to look to do these on the fly, but once you learn how to do it, it's really a powerful tool. Mirroring is a real powerful tool. Secret tool. When I go to make a deal, I know what I want. And I know enough about the person to make some hard decisions before I go in there to have the deal. The first thing I know is, or I want to know is this kind of person that is able to make the decision I need? If it's not, I don't make any decisions with middle management. I go to the boss. I don't deal with middle management. If I have to deal with middle management to make a deal, I don't make a deal. I don't even try because that's not the right place for me. You're trying to figure out a lot of information in a short time. What's this person like? What's important to them? What are their values? What are their ethics? What are their goals for the deal? You're trying to get a lot of information in a really short time. If I'm doing a deal with a company, I'll go online, I'll read all about the company, and then I'll go to LinkedIn and I'll read all about their bio on LinkedIn if it's possible. There's so many questions that you need to figure out. You know, what's important? That's what's important to them. That's probably the biggest one. What do you think they're expecting to get out of the negotiation? What do you think they want? Put yourself in their shoes, because if you can negotiate the deal from their shoes before you even get there, you're going to be a lot better off. You know, you ever play the game of war? In the game of war, each of you trying to guess where the game of battleship, each of you trying to guess where the battleship is. And whoever is closest to the battleship is the one that wins. It's preparation. It's thinking about what the other person will do or what you expect the other person will do. You've got to be prepared. When I go to negotiate something, I take every single thing I think I possibly will need. I know I'm not going to need all that stuff. I don't care. I take it all with me because I'm going to be prepared rather than being caught with my pants down. Because if you don't go into negotiations prepared, you're going to get slaughtered. They're going to get the best deal and you're going to get screwed. When you're rich, you negotiate everything. There's never, ever one time I didn't. I bought a lot of expensive shit in my life. I bought a lot of expensive stuff. One thing about rich people is they will always try to get a better deal. And one thing that will make you try to get a better deal is after you've done it like three or four times, you realize people will negotiate with rich people to give them a better deal because the amount of profit is so high. If I'm buying a $100,000 Rolex, $50,000 of that is profit. So I think about this. Okay, I'm going to go buy a watch. And they would rather give up some of the profit than lose that deal. So what's their magic number? Usually about 60%. So 60% of their profit, which would be, I don't know, 30,000, if they're 50,000, 100,000, 50,000 would be their profit, somewhere about 30,000, okay? So I go in and I ask for 25% off. I'll give you 75,000. That's most I'm going to give you. Well, they're like, well, would I rather have 25% of my profit, or would I rather have nothing? I'll do the deal. They'll make the deal. Rich people always, 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 always ask. Without doing anything at all, you can get 5 to 10% easy just because you asked for it. You can double down and play hardball and ask for 20, 25, just depending on how much you're spending and the type of store you're going to or the type of deal you're doing. But cars, jewelry, especially jewelry, business deals, even in everyday shops, I've gotten massive discounts in luxury stores, and I've gotten massive discounts in regular stores because I'm willing to pay cash and I'm willing to go talk to the manager. I went into Montgomery. My friend of mine, we got in this argument. Two rich bitches arguing. This is never good for anybody. And I told her, I said, I can get a deal on anything, any store, anything. She goes, you can't get a deal in Montgomery Wards. I said, you think? And she goes, no. I said, I bet you I can get at least 10% off of anything in that store if I want to. And she goes, anything? I go, yeah, anything. And she goes, no, you can't. I go, yeah, I can. And I says, name something that you don't think I can get 10% off of. And she goes, washing machines. I go, so you don't think I can get 10% off a washing machine? She goes, no, you have to wait for the sale. They won't negotiate. They'll tell you to just wait for the next sale. I go, okay, watch this. So we go to Monkey Ward's, I make a beeline to the back. And ask for the store manager. What do you want to see the store manager for? Oh, I just have a question about the washing machines and purchasing washing machines. Oh, you can go talk to the salesman. No, this isn't a salesman question. I need to speak to the manager. And so you got to be insistent sometimes. So the manager finally comes out. And I said, hey, I want to buy these washing machines. And I want to buy 10 of them, and at 10 of them, I want to get a 15% discount. And so each one of these washing machines about $400, and you're probably making $100 off of each one of them. So you could get $75 off of 10 of them, or I could go to Sears. What would you like me to do? He didn't even wiggle. He didn't even take a second breath. He said, that'd be great. No problem. I'll do that deal. My friend's like, you cheated. You bought 10. I said, you didn't tell me how many. You just told me I couldn't get 10% off. I got 15% off, so you have to buy dinner. You have to ask yourself, what can you do to get me a better deal? Ask yourself, what can this person do to get me a better deal? If you're not talking to the right person, have them reach out to make the deal or the call to get back to you. Do not deal with somebody that can't make the deal. Are you the person that can make me this kind of deal? They're not the right person. Don't waste your time. Go to the guy who is. If you don't ask, you don't get. Starting tomorrow, start being a baller. Go to the department manager. Hey, I'd like to buy this, but I don't want to wait for a sale. So, can you give me 10% off today? And I'll buy it right now. Start doing that, folks, and you will be shocked at how much money you will immediately start saving. And any store, you have to know who to talk to. And you have to be willing to ask. And that is really, really hard for some people. Well, I can't do that. Well, then you're just leaving money on the table. Sorry. But start it. Get used to doing it now, because when you get rich, you're going to lose millions if you don't. Basically, it all breaks down to figure out what you really want. And if you don't figure out what you really want, you're going to lose. It's that hardcore. You don't get what you want in life. You get what you're willing to negotiate. And if you want to negotiate with ease and effectively, you have to have a very clear understanding of what you specifically want and what you're willing to exchange in order to get it. And that's basically the brass tacks of negotiation. I hope that helps. And I hope that these tips help you when you start negotiating. And plan to be a winner, folks. Start negotiating tomorrow. Negotiate on every major purchase. Every major purchase. You'd be surprised. Do you have any questions? Well, thank you, humanitarians, for spending your evening with me. This is Ms. Parker from RV Project Help. And I want you to be the best that you can be, the best humanitarian that you can possibly be. The world is waiting for you, humanitarians. God bless you. Good night.